I'm a big fan of The Good Place, but it's very funny. I had some friends, when they saw you were going to be on our show, said, oh, love Chidi, love The Good Place. Had a couple others who were maybe even more excited that I'd be talking to Danny from The Electric Company.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Now,
it's so weird. Because I shot those shows, like, I think I was like 8 or 9 years ago, so there's people that were like, what, these kids that were watching the show, you know, when they were like little, are coming up to me now, taller than me, bigger than me, and they're like, man, I used to watch you on The Electric Company. I was like, geez, that's, you know, but they're kids, and they grow and they change, and I'm just, you know, grayer.
You know? I know how that works. I also had a chance to see you on stage. My wife and I saw you with a friend of our show, Bryan Cranston, in All the Way down at ART in Cambridge.
Oh, whoa, yeah. Yeah, oh, man, yeah, that was a while back now. It was like 5 years ago.
It was, yeah. And then I also found out we've got a mutual friend, a guy that I did a show with up here. Matthew Conlon was telling me that he knows you from Ensemble Studio Theater, and very exciting.
Yeah.
You've got a new show, a new play of yours that has opened already, right, called Travisville.
Wow, you know Matthew from doing... doing shows up there.
Yeah, he came up here, and we've got a regional theater here, and he was Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, and I was the prosecutor.
Oh wow! Oh yeah, and I really like Matthew. That's so funny. I haven't talked to him in a while, but yeah, he's a good guy.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the show. Am I to understand that when you auditioned for The Good Place, you didn't really understand what the show was about and didn't know if you had any chance to even get it?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, I had no idea what the show was. They gave us essentially dummy sides. you know, our audition material was, like, just sort of made up stuff that was sort of in the vein of our character, but not at all the character, not at all the real scenario. And I thought it was funny, and I thought it was fun, but I asked for a script, and they're like, they're not handing those out. And so I was like, oh, okay. I had no idea. And then I, like, you know, went back for a callback and went in for the actual test with Kristen, and I got the part, and then they called me, and they were like, hey, so that part you auditioned for, Chris, not at all his name, and the scenario that you were in, yeah, that's not it. So why don't you come on into the office, and we'll break down what's actually going on in this TV show. And so I went in, and I sat down with Mike and Drew, and they told me everything that was happening. I thought it was a really cool idea. And, I had no idea what I was actually getting into.
How long does it take to say yes to an offer when you know you'll be working with Kristen Bell, Ted Danson, and Michael Schur?
How long does it take to say yes? How long does it take to say yes?
Yeah.
no time at all. you're just like, yeah, sure, yes, I will be there.
Now,
if I get to be there every day, yes, okay, great, yes, I will be there.
Does it come naturally to you to be the moral compass?
I don't know. Actually, I mean, you know, I am neurotic, like much like Chidi is, but I'm, I feel like he is sort of guided by that morality and needs to talk about it. I would much rather just sort of keep my mouth shut and just do the right thing. I don't think it's necessarily that I feel like being a compass means that you, like, try to guide people in some way, and I don't think I necessarily try to do that. I kind of, like, try to just sweep my side of the street.
We're talking with William Jackson Harper here on Downtown. Well, I took a couple of philosophy courses 1,000 years ago as an undergrad, but things keep coming up in the show that spark a memory, and none more so than the trolley problem. First of all, is there any kind of good answer to the trolley problem?
No, there absolutely is not. It's all bad answers. It's always going to cost someone something, and whoever's operating that trolley, you will walk away scarred. So it's, yeah, there's no good answer.
How long did it take you to film those scenes?
You know, honestly, the longest scenes that to film were the ones where we were actually on the trolley. That basically took all day because they would shoot me in the face with the blood cannon, and then I'd have to change and get everything out of my hair, which is, you know, basically they like spray a hairline on me so I'd, you know, look very clean cut. And, you know, so like it was a huge reset every time they shot me with a blood cannon and, you know, try to get all the blood, make sure there's no evidence behind my ear, in my ears. I mean, actually, when they shot me with the blood cannon, like the first or second time, I had my mouth wide open. And this is actually the take they used, and it got all over my teeth. A piece of foam, which was actually doubling for like a piece of bone, just went directly down my throat.
Oh.
So it's, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty long, intense day. But yeah, it pretty much took the whole day to get all those trolley shots and the blood shots and all that stuff.
Well, I'm loving season 3 and having everybody back on Earth. Good to see Janet and Michael without their powers, and watching you guys struggle. Is Eleanor the biggest challenge for Chidi to bring into the light?
You know, it's different this season, I feel, because she initiates the change, or, you know, she initiates coming to my office and trying to improve, you know, and so it's a different energy from the first season where, you know, she's like, okay, help me to be a better person. After she's seen the error of her ways and seen that it's sort of like throwing the world into chaos, it's like now she's in a much more sort of, she's just more open to the idea of being better. And so it's different. In a way, I feel like she's sort of driving the moral aspect of the show a little bit more this season than Chidi is. Because it's she really wants to be there. She's not bored. She wants to be there.
Do you think there's any way that a hip-hop musical about Kierkegaard could actually become a hit?
No, absolutely not. But I do think, I mean, like, the lyrics were written out, and I think it's actually really, it would be interesting to find a way to put some music to it and do it. You know, I've thought about it myself, but I'm just too lazy to actually put it together. But yeah, it would be, I don't know, if nothing else, it would be incredibly funny for, you know, for fans of the show and for, you know, good old-fashioned philosophy files, you know.
Speaking of fans of the show, do you ever look at any of the fan theories about what's going on with the characters and who they might actually be and all of the ideas about what's going on for those watching at home?
Yeah, I do. yeah, there's some great ones. There's like, I love how people sort of, you know, this is a simulation idea. They're not actually back on Earth. You know, I love that, you know, our audiences are just so, they really think about the show, you know, and they really sort of latch on to any sort of weird dramaturgical quirks that they, you know, that they could mean something. And it's so fun to watch. They're all wrong all the time, but I see how they got there. You know, I see how they landed on those theories. Cause it's like, oh yeah, you know, I think if you're really doing a deep dive on the show and really thinking about it, this theory does hold up. So yeah, I love them.
How far into the series did you get an inkling of how this was going to latch on in the public's consciousness? And are you surprised by it at all?
I am, because I thought the show was just so crazy weird, and the idea was so crazy high concept that, and it was going to be on the network, and so I was like, well, you know, I'm not sure if people are going to come along with this, because this isn't the kind of show that you can just put on in the background necessarily, because if it's just on the background, you're going to miss some really strange piece of information that makes a really strange joke work at the end of the show. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, a lot of shows, especially on network television, you know, it's sort of just, it's meant to be enjoyed sort of at your leisure. You can drop in and come out and then drop, you know, it's a much easier watch in a lot of ways. But then, you know, our show is just a really long narrative and it's really high concept. And, you know, I just assume that folks would be sort of like, you know, like, I don't go to a network to watch this kind of thing necessarily. And, but I think audiences are really smart and I think that they're open. And, I think our show assumes the best of our potential audiences. And I think that, you know, we've been rewarded richly for that. And, so yeah, I had no idea that it would take off like that. I thought people would just sort of be like, you know, like, okay, it's weird, but I don't really have time.
Well, yeah, it requires an investment from the audience, but those who do love it. And I have to think too, that it might not have been as big a hit in the days before people could go back and get caught up by watching streaming episodes, because I know a number of people that I've told about this show have said, oh my gosh, thank you for letting me know about it. I've gone back. I'm caught up. I'm watching in real time in season 3. And that might not have been possible, whatever, 4 or 5 years ago. But now, you know, people, and I know a lot of people who've chosen to binge watch it as well.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people have. And I think that, you know, because of the long narrative of our show, it really lends itself to binging, because it's, you know, the arc isn't done at the end of that half hour or 22 minutes rather. So it's, yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of people probably would get in, and see people getting cocooned and be like, okay, well, what is this? Okay, obviously they have gone so far down the narrative rabbit hole here, I won't catch up. I to make cocooning make sense, you know, oh, lava monster, right on, have no idea what that means. So I think the fact that, you know, the show does sort of reward you for sticking with it, it does really lend itself to just like watching several episodes at a time. And, you know, honestly, each season is 13 episodes, 22 minutes apiece. And so it's, you know, basically in about 3.5 hours, you know, you can pretty much get through an entire season if you just go straight through.
Can you, just be between us, can you tell us what's coming up at the end of this season?
Oh, absolutely not.
I thought I had absolutely it for not. A second.
Yeah. No. You gotta wait for that one.
I will gladly wait for that. I want to also mention some of your movie work. I loved Patterson. What a terrific movie that was. And you've got some films that you've worked on that are in post-production. When can we expect to see those?
Well, the one I actually just finished, Midsommar, is expected out, I guess, in summer of next year. So that's the only one that I have like a solid date on. And it's, I'm excited about that one. It's a new horror film by Ari Aster, who was the writer and director of Hereditary.
Oh, wonderful.
So which I thought was just a brilliant movie and really disturbing and really, really wonderful performances. So that's the only one that I have a date, a release date on. But, you know, I have another movie called Lost Holiday, which is floating around, and hopefully, you know, sometime later this year will be released. And a movie called Man in the Woods that I shot last year here in New York. And that one, I'm not really sure when that one's due out either, but it's a really sort of interesting noir mystery that I'm excited about.
And your play, Travis Ville, is playing, I believe, through, October 28th at Ensemble Studio Theater?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really great cast. I couldn't be happier with the actors in this play. They're just phenomenal. The director did a beautiful job staging it, and honestly took more than his fair share sort of helming the ship, because he was, I was in Budapest. I was out of town for work, and he took on way more than is fair for a director. You know, he was really, he was just really phenomenal, and working with me remotely. So, Steve Brodmax is the director, the best director anywhere. Everyone should hire him. And my cast is the best cast in New York.
That's awesome. Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Love the show. And it's great to have the chance to talk with you. We wish you continued success.
Thank you so much.
And if you see Matthew, tell him I said hello.
I will.
All right. Thanks again, Will.
All right, man.
Bye-bye now.